Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another episode of the Footmarks podcast. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at DefMango on Twitter. And this time, I've got someone special with me. Jared is away on vacation, and we've got resident Good Areas writer Shayan Ahmed Khan with me. Shayan, we've been working at Good Areas for over 2 years. You've been the main man behind the keyboard, and this time you're making your debut in front of the camera. How does that feel?
Feels really nice, man. Hello, everyone. I'm really excited to make my debut. And funnily enough, this is my debut on a player who was my favorite player, first favorite player in cricket. Like, I fell in love with cricket because of Sehwag.
So I love
that's
that.
A pretty good start.
Also, solid spoiler for the public. And you guessed it, or you didn't guess it. Well, Shayan told you. The title for this particular episode of the Footmarks podcast is Veeru the IPL Disruptor. So we will be talking about Virendra Sehwag's exploits in the IPL. And Shayan, Sehwag batted 104 times in the IPL and he averaged 27.5, striking at over 155, which is flat out insane for his era. Yeah. And he's not really a disruptor because anchor batters remained prevalent for years after his retirement, right? But then again, I feel he's simply not talked about enough as a T20 powerhouse. You know, people talk about his test cricket exploits more. I suppose that's why we're recording this podcast, right?
Exactly, yeah. And I feel he's even underrated in ODI cricket, isn't he?
Yes.
Like, he's for the insane strike rates that he had, just because his average wasn't as high, he isn't considered an ODI great, but he should be considered one, right?
Yeah.
And the same thing with the IPL as well. Like, he averaged less than 30, that's fine. But he struck it more than 150, 155. And this was all before 2015. Like, this was before the wrist spin revolution, before everything. Like, before T20 was even a serious sport. Even before the impact player rules and everything came into place.
Yes.
So, it was just insane to strike at that rate. And this was also, remember that Sehwag played 3 seasons when he was basically finished. Like, he didn't play any international cricket. And the last 3 seasons were when he was not playing international cricket for India. Yet he was playing for, he had 1 season for Delhi, I believe, and then a couple for Punjab Kings.
No, I think you make a fantastic point. And really, his numbers are bizarre. So Varun dug up the adjusted average and adjusted strike rate for Sehwag as per the current era. And it comes out to be 31. With the bat, his batting average, and then his adjusted strike rate is 178. So a combination of 31 and 178 kind of shows you that if he stepped into, you know, IPL 2025 as a youngster, he would be, you know, one of the most sought after batting assets in the league. And I love the fact that you kind of mentioned how he is not talked about enough in ODI cricket either. And even though, you know, an average of 35 in his era is quite good. I think that is what it is. And he struck it better than run a ball. And it gets crazier because in the first 5 seasons of the IPL, Sehwag's ODI strike rate was better than many batters playing in the IPL. And frankly, you know, it's really like ridiculous to me how people take the piss out of Sehwag's ODI career. Because I've seen that plenty, right? Because they say he's not consistent enough. I mean, this dude is a friggin' time traveler. So it really doesn't really add up.
Absolutely. And you have to also factor in that he played with some pretty good batting lineups, right? So a player like him at the top of the order with Sachin Tendulkar, that's like the dream opening partnership, isn't it? And that won India the 2011 World Cup. And for me personally, it was those first ball first. Like, I tuned into the 2011 World Cup and I saw Sehwag hit a four of the first ball, right? Like, that was just insane. And he kept doing it in almost every game. And then that Pakistan semi-final, where he just hit so many fours of Umar Gul, right?
Yes.
And Umar Gul was one of the best bowlers in the world at that point in white ball cricket, both ODIs and T20s, I believe. But, like, even though his contribution on the scorecard may not have been as high in that semi-final, he made 38 runs, and Raina made 36, I believe, and then Sachin made 85. But he had a few drop chances and everything,
well,
although he was the main man, of course.
If you can call 4 drop chances a few, right? But no, I absolutely agree with you that Sehwag, right from the word go in that semi-final versus Pakistan, set the tone. And I love how your face lights up when you talk about Virendra Sehwag. So before we get into all of the numbers, because this is going to be a very stats-heavy podcast, guys. And before we go there, Shayan, tell me what Virendra Sehwag means to you.
Yeah, man. I mean, I would just say that I fell in love with the sport because of him. As I said, the 2011 World Cup, where he was just scoring those first balls. First, and it was that 175 in the first game, right? That 175 versus Bangladesh in the first game. And I was like, yeah, man. He is the guy. Because obviously, everybody was a fan of Sachin Tendulkar at that point. He is one of the greatest cricketers to have ever played the game. But then Sehwag, what he did in that World Cup, that was just special. And for me, it would be like whenever Sehwag was batting, I would watch the whole time. And once he would get out, I would go out to play cricket or something like that. So it was him. I would watch his batting a lot, right? And then, even, of course, I couldn't witness prime Sehwag in Test cricket, but I remember a bit of that South Africa series in 2010. Very rough memories, 2010, 2011. And then, of course, he made 100 versus England as well in 2012. I think in Ahmedabad, if I'm not wrong. And that was the series where India lost that series. They won the first match where Sehwag made a ton, but then after that, they lost that series. So, like, those were one of few of my early memories. Then I also remember that he made that double ton, right, in 2011. I believe that was December. And I remember being so happy about it when he made that double hundred. He made 219. And I think that was the highest score at that point, if I'm not wrong.
Yes. No, he was the second
second one to do
batter
it, right?
in ODI history to get or cross 200, and Sachin was the first, and Sachin stopped at 200. Sehwag, you correct, he went on to 219. So you probably got
219.
His second triple ton in Test cricket, right?
No, I don't think so. I would
Oh,
have
you
missed
didn't?
that, I think.
I
Yeah,
caught
I don't
both,
think I would
man,
have.
and my earliest memories of Sehwag are Multan 2004 and the way
Exactly.
he kind of completely ripped Pakistan apart. And you know,
That
again,
rivalry
we
with
could,
Shoaib.
yes, that rivalry with Shoaib, and we could have an entire separate podcast on Virendra Sehwag, the Test batter, because that's what he's known for the most. But you know, it's weird because T20 cricket, you're supposed to be hitting fours and sixes, but even, you know, for his era, you had a lot of anchor batters, and anchors even persisted long after Sehwag. He just completely took to the format like a fish takes to water.
Man, I just think he didn't care. He just wanted to slap the ball out of the park. I don't think he really cared about all of these things. And the thing with him is that he could hit on both sides of the wicket, I feel. Like, he was really good at the cut shot. And I think if you gave him a little bit of width, he would cut. Even if you didn't give him a lot of width, he would cut the ball, right? Both off spin and pace. And then again, if you bowled on his pads, again, he would flick your leg glance. Again, there are very few options when you're bowling to him, right? He may not be as consistent as, say, a Sachin Tendulkar or a Virat Kohli, but when you're talking about the great Indian batters, I think he has to still be there in the conversation. I'm not even talking about the IPL or anything. All time,
Absolutely.
everything. He is one of
Has to
probably
be.
one of the five greatest batters that India has ever produced, in my eyes. I would say
Yeah, I
that.
mean, I'm sure a lot of people, at least cricket nerds, might agree with you. And Sehwag was an absolute nightmare for opposition teams to bowl at. Ask me, right? I've seen a lot of Sehwag when India used to play Pakistan. And sure, Pakistan might have gotten the better of him at times, but whenever he was on top, India would more often than not win those games. So he was a game changer. And players who are off that mold can't be as consistent as your Sachins, right? Or your
Of
Kohlis.
course. Exactly,
So that's
exactly.
kind of what made him special. See ball, hit ball while he's humming a tune. You know, that was the Sehwag way. But anyway, let's get nerdy now. And all, as you all know, at Good Areas, we love to look at true strike rates. And I believe, Shayan, correct me if I'm wrong, that Sehwag is 14 points clear of the universe boss, Christopher Henry Gayle, on that metric. And yet, Gayle is the one who is synonymous with the IPL. Whereas Sehwag, weirdly, you know, despite being an insanely fast scorer, isn't as synonymous at all.
Yeah, and I think for Gayle, the thing is that he had that 2011 season, right, where he just came in as a mid-season replacement for Dirk Nannis, and then he just lit up the IPL. In those 3 years at his peak, he was just destructive and he would play long. He could just destroy you for long amounts of time. So I think that is probably the difference between a Sehwag and a Gayle. And of course, Sehwag was really good from 2008 to 2012, and the IPL probably wasn't taken as seriously as it is now, right? And if Sehwag produced the numbers he did now, they would still be really great, right? Like, you talked about how his adjusted numbers right now would be 31-178, right? Like, that is probably what Phil Salt did last season. And Phil Salt was really good. And when RCB signed Phil Salt, I thought that was a really good signing. So, and he was so good for KKR as well, right? When they won the title.
I think the Sunrisers Hyderabad would have snapped up Sehwag, paid a lot of money for him as well if he was a modern-day player. But let's you know, dial it back all the way to 2008, the very first IPL season, right?
Yeah.
And Sehwag, in that season, he struck at 184.5, which is ridiculous, right? His best year, however, in the IPL was what, 2011, where his average, average and strike rate combination was 39 and 177. So he's averaging 39, striking at 177, which again are numbers which would hold up.
Numbers.
More than hold up in today's day and age, right? And his true average for that year was 17, with a true strike rate of 65. And, you know, this, again, you mentioned this earlier, but he was doing this without the luxury of an impact sub. And that needs to be talked about, right?
Exactly, exactly. Like, we often talk about Suresh Raina, right? Like, he played that insane innings against Punjab in that qualifier. But in that same game, Sehwag also made 122 of 58. And he also had this thing of, like, he didn't consider off-spinners as bowlers or something like that. So he would just, whenever an off-spinner would come to bowl, he would just hit sixes of them, or at least try to hit sixes of them. And then he would also say that, because I'm also an off-spinner, so something like that. That thing was also there.
True. So interesting that you bring that game up, right? It was 2014, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah.
And he scored that 122 of 58 deliveries in a qualifier versus Chennai. And of course, we remember the Suresh Raina innings more. But also, I want to bring up one theme with respect to Sehwag's IPL career. He would often have a couple of knocks which would elevate his numbers. And I feel that 122 or 58 deliveries kind of did that for him in that season as well. Whereas, you know, if you look at the entire stretch of games, he had some relatively slow knocks sandwiched between some unreal blitzes. So what would you want to say about that?
Yeah, so I think 2013 onwards, he's just not at that level anymore that he was for the first five seasons. Like, he was still striking at well above the expected rates, but his true average obviously dropped. And if you remember in 2014, he got those lenses as well, right? So he was playing with the specs or like whatever those are called
Sehwag,
exactly. But
Sehwag was a hand-eye coordination sort of player, right? A touch player in that regard. So eyesight mattered.
Definitely. And that's what I'm saying. He used to play the cut shot a lot, right? And in that particular innings versus CSK, that 122, he played the cut shot a lot. And then he would just flat bat those sixes of spinners. Like, he would hit a lot of sixes of Ashwin and Jadeja, right? He was just hitting on both sides of the wicket. And most of his fours were on the offside, but his sixes were towards long on and mid-wicket around that region roughly. So, like, it's just really hard to set a field against a bowler like him, against a batter like him, right?
Yeah, I mean, I always thought that Sehwag doesn't hit them, he slaps them. Right?
He clobbers them. That was the word I was looking for.
Exactly. Like, that was kind of his style. And you speak of the 2014 season, right? His strike rate in the power play in that season was 136, which is quite high for that era, and was the fourth best in the league for that season.
Yeah.
And we're talking about post-international cricket Sehwag with the lenses.
Exactly.
So that's something that is worth noting over here, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And even if you go back, I would say four seasons back, 136 was a pretty good strike rate in the power play in the IPL or in general in T20 cricket. Like, probably if you go to the BBL or some other league, I think 136 would still not be a bad strike rate in T20 cricket at the moment. I would say like in certain leagues or in certain low scoring leagues and everything. Of course, in the IPL with the impact player rule now, it's a different thing. But if you go back, even I would say 2018 to 2021, 2022, 136 would be a pretty good strike rate to have.
I remember when Shaan Masood came on the Red Anchor and spoke to Jared. Yeah. He spoke of T20 cricket and how he had talked to a lot of experts, and they told him that try to have an average and strike rate combination of 31-30. And 31-30 would get you retired out these days.
exactly. So that's with Devin Conway, right?
Yeah, exactly. That was an atrocious knock. 69 or 49, was it? Oh my God.
Yeah, he got stuck, man.
And we are slamming Kohli more often than not for his 60 ball tons, right? This guy, Devin Conway, scored 69 or 49. But anyway, I'm digressing. Point is that T20 cricket is moving at an astronomical rate, and it has evolved so much in the last 3 years even. I mean, I feel like it's gotten exponential, the rate of evolution, and the impact sub obviously has kind of aided that as well. Anyway, we still have a lot to talk about with respect to Veeru at the IPL, but it's time for a short break. You're watching the Footmarks podcast with Behram and Shayan, and we'll be back in about half a minute.
As a cricket journalist, I would travel up to 200 days a year, and I loved every part of it, except for one, this little evil pin here, because I needed this to change my SIM card. And when you travel in cricket, you're quite often going from country to country. Don't get me started on how much this would annoy me in the West Indies, but even going from New Zealand to Australia, this pin was the worst. Well, with the Sally eSIM, they sort all of that out for you. They have an eSIM app that you install once, it's cheap, and it works in more than 160 countries around the world. No more turning up at an airport and lining up for a local SIM, trying to give over your passport and your details, and you just want to get in a taxi and go where you're going. No, Sally make it so much easier. You just download the app before you travel and you decide what kind of plan you actually need. Oh, and if you do that with our code, GOODAREAS, or one word, you get an exclusive 15% discount on Sally eSIM data plans. So go right now and download the Sally app and use the code GOODAREAS, or one word, at checkout and travel like a pro with Sally.
Welcome back to the Footmarks podcast. You guys are with Behram and Shayan, who is making his debut, just a reminder for everybody. So go show him some love. Shayan, what is your Twitter handle?
Reads by Shayan.
Okay, so go follow him as well, folks. Anyway, coming back to Virendra Sehwag and the IPL and that love affair. So, Virendra Sehwag has had a true strike rate of more than 50 in four IPL seasons. And as we mentioned, even in 2014, where he was past his prime, he had a true strike rate of 34. And that is a very, very high number. And he played for Punjab that year. They even made the final, right? And post-international retirement, Sehwag wasn't like the same sort of gravy. He had regressed. And despite that, Sehwag's true strike rate in the IPL after international retirement was 20 fucking 7, right? I suppose underappreciated or under-recognized, if that's a word, might be too weak of an adjective here, Shayan.
Yeah, definitely. See, like, of course, his consistency dropped a bit when we talk about the last three seasons. And like, yes. I mean, by consistency, I mean those quick 30s. He was not getting a lot of those, like, so I was looking at the numbers and he had a lot of those low 20s and 30s for some reason, which I believe was probably a part of his declines, right? But whenever he would get going, he would have those insane knocks. So we talked about that 122 versus Punjab. Then he had another 95 in 2013, and that was against Mumbai Indians, who went on to win the IPL that year, right, in 2013. And then again, against the eventual champions in 2014, Kolkata Knight Riders, he again made 72 of 50 and nobody else made more than 15, I believe. Or only just one batter made more than 15. So that was the level he was operating at, even when he was supposedly finished, right? So I would say only 2015 was one season where he was really bad. Hmm. He made only 99 runs in 8 innings. But 2013 and 2014, like, he was fine. Like, for most players, that's pretty good, right?
I would actually love to know what his IPL numbers, raw numbers, look like if you exclude his last season. Because we all know he was dog shit in his last season. So, I don't know. Varun's not here, but I guess I'll ask him to pull those up at some point. Anyway, coming back to true strike rates, right? Because this is the main metric when we're talking about Sehwag, obviously. Yeah. And I feel like it kind of gives you an idea of just how great he was. As Shayan mentioned earlier in the podcast, Sehwag was unfazed whether he was facing pace or spin. And the numbers back this up. So, Sehwag's true strike rate versus spin was north of 50, and it was 42 against fast bowlers. So, bowling sides, Shayan, were basically doomed when they were bowling to Veeru. That's the only conclusion, like, I can make over here.
Like, you can just hope that he gets out early, right? You're just hoping against Chopra. It's a bit like probably with Travis Head or Phil Salt or Abhishek Sharma these days, right? Like, you just hope that they get out.
And you're probably, if they get out. No, finish your thought.
I think Head is probably a bit more consistent than them, I would say. But say Phil Salt is probably a good example for this, right? Like, you know, he can get out early, but the day he doesn't, he can score a lot of quick runs, right? But see, with Sehwag, the thing is with Salt is not at that level when we're talking about spin. So after the power play, you know that Salt might get out to spin or he may not score as quickly as, say, a Sehwag would. But Sehwag, when he would cross the power play, he would keep hitting. So that is the key difference between him and other power play bashers. Even Travis Head, if you notice, after the power play, he's not at that same level anymore. Like, he is still really good. But I don't think he is as ruthless against spin the way Sehwag was. And I found this really interesting stat. So against Ravindra Jadeja, Ashwin and Amit Mishra, Sehwag had a really good record in the IPL, right? So I'll just read out the numbers once. Against Jadeja, he made 55 runs of 25 balls without getting out. Against Ashwin, he made 42 of 25 and got out once. Against Amit Mishra, he made 50 of 25 and got out once. Like, and we're talking about three great IPL spinners, right? He was just demolishing them for fun. And I think relatively, Harbhajan Singh was still, like, better against him. He had an average of 27.5 and a strike rate of 137.5. And Piyush, even against Piyush Chawla, he struck at nearly 180 and averaging 30. So Even if he would get out to spin a few times, like, these are the best spinners in the league in the history of the IPL, and he was really, really good against most of them.
Now, I mean, if I'm an opposition team captain and Sehwag is opening the batting, right, and I have to somehow, because I have to get him out early, otherwise he's going to obliterate my team, I'd probably hope that he chops on, because he did chop on a fair bit, right? Because he was a big cutter of the ball. Or leading edges, perhaps. That's how you kind of hope that he'll get out.
Yeah, I think in limited overs, and in probably in 50 overs cricket or in test cricket, you could hope that maybe he nicks the ball off.
Yes,
because in that outside off some corner. Yeah,
that's versus the moving ball. And you don't get that a lot in the IPL, right?
A lot.
You do get it, but not a lot.
Sometimes. Yeah. Yes. So also interestingly, if you look at his power play numbers, the two bowlers who bowled really well to him in the power play, the two pacers who bowled really well to him in the power play were Malinga and Dale Steyn. So Malinga, against Malinga, his record was 32 of 30 balls and he got out once. And against Dale Steyn, it was 22 of 29 balls and he got out once. So like, these were the two bowlers that I can see who kept him relatively quiet, right? And Brett Lee is also close.
Those are two of the best bowlers to ever play the IPL. So I'm not even going to throw any shade to Sehwag over there. Most batters would struggle. And we spoke of how it was crucial to get him out in, let's say, his first 10 balls. But on the flip side, if you look at Sehwag's first 10 balls true strike rate, he is even higher than, he's higher than most people. I think he's, who is he not higher than? Because he wasn't a slow starter like Gayle. And his true strike rate was even higher when he chased targets. We know that thing. So I'd love to know, I can't remember this from the piece that you wrote, if anyone had a better first 10 ball true strike rate than Sehwag.
Only two batters, Andrew Russell and Glenn Maxwell.
And look at the stature of those batters, right?
Exactly.
It's insane. So basically, can we say that Sehwag was Abhishek Sharma before Abhishek Sharma?
Yeah, I think that's probably a close parallel, right? Because even Abhishek Sharma is really good against spin. But obviously we're talking about Abhishek Sharma not yet in his peak. And Sehwag also probably didn't play T20 cricket in his prime, or did he?
T20 cricket came around.
What would you say was Sehwag's peak in cricket? Like, as a batter, what would you say was Sehwag's peak?
Mid-2000s.
Mid-2000s, right? So he didn't play much of it then. But even when we're talking about that post-2007 World Cup, right? Like, he got that second win and he was really, really good in ODI cricket.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
He had an average of 47, 48 and a strike rate of 120. And those numbers, those strike rates are like, as we said, those are ridiculous even for the IPL back then. Like, not ridiculous, but still pretty good. Like, middle of the road of sorts. And that is ODI cricket. That format is 2.5 times longer. So
I remember a line from your piece where you said that Baz McCullum for the first 5 IPL seasons was striking just over Sehwag's ODI strike rate in that period or something. So that kind of, goes on to show you just how, maybe disruptive is not the right word, because he is a disruptor in a sense, a disruptor of matches. But he didn't bring that change to cricket like Travis Sheikh did, for instance, right? He was a demolisher, no doubt about it. But anyway, we have talked a lot about true strike rate, right? But let's shift the conversation to impact now. Right. And you can kind of give a brief explanation of what impact means for our listeners and viewers. But Sehwag was also immense when it came to that metric too, wasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. So essentially, impact is defined as how many runs a batter changes the predicted final score by. So in this metric, I would say that both average and strike rate have importance, right? So it's not that batters who play long innings would always be penalized for it. And if you play a long innings at a good strike rate, that is like pretty much the ideal scenario to have. And so if we can give an example, the par score in the IPL since 2022 is about 175. And if you're an opener and the predicted score goes up to 185 by the time you're out, your impact is plus 10. That is just from one player. And Jared often talks about this, right? That if you're a strong batting side, you want to score 20% more than par. And if you're getting plus 10 runs from just one player, that is insane. Like, you can just build such a strong team around him. Of course, back then, probably T20 cricket was in its nascent stage. So analytics and everything wasn't as mainstream. And he did play with some pretty good players, actually, I would say. Like, he played with Kevin Peterson, who was also one of my favorite cricketers, one of my early favorite cricketers. Played with David De Villiers.
How the hell are you an RCB fan then and not a Delhi Daredevils fan?
I was a Delhi fan for like the first 3 seasons. And then Chris Gayle and AB De Villiers and Virat Kohli happened. So
I just
switched sides. I was pretty young back then.
All Punjab, Delhi fans, now you know that Cheyenne is a... Well, I can't even call him a glory hunter because RCB haven't won shit.
Because neither of them have won anything.
Anyway, so Sehwag was killer when it came to impact, right? Like, this guy would... What? Would he... have an impact of 0.36 runs every single ball that he played. It's something like that, right?
Yeah, that's just an insane number, isn't it?
Yeah. Like if he plays three balls, he's having a plus one run impact.
Exactly, exactly. And the thing with him was that he wouldn't actually play that long, right? Like, so if we look at balls per innings for IPL openers, he is actually in the bottom three, like with Sunil Narayan, Prithvi Shaw, Abhishek Sharma, Parthiv Patel. And you can sort of guess this tier, right? Like these players who wouldn't play long innings, but they would often have those short bursts of impact. And that is sort of where Sehwag was. But even amongst them, he was at a different level, right? Like he would create twice the impact of KL Rahul and Virat Kohli, who would play like twice the balls than him. So, so imagine you're getting that from one player.
I'm really happy that you brought that up, because I feel like the best way to judge Sehwag's impact is the fact that he faced, 11 to 14 deliveries less than Virat and KL when they opened the batting, right?
Exactly.
His
exactly.
impact, though, is nearly twice as much as those guys. And it's on par with Haydos, and only Chris Gayle has higher impact. And Gayle is an IPL legend. So that speaks volumes, really.
Exactly, exactly. And like Gayle is probably, I would say, in the conversation for being the greatest IPL batter ever with AB de Villiers and some of the other batters who we'll talk about later. But even Matthew Hayden and Adam Gilchrist, I would say these guys were really good in the early stages of the IPL. Sanath Jayasuriya had a really good season in 2008. But Sehwag, from 2008 to 2012, you can make a really strong case that he was one of the top three batters in the league at that point, right? But he wasn't talked about like that. Yeah, now we can say that. But back then, he was probably not hyped the same way.
I mean, I remember Gilly, he was really good at the IPL. But after reading your piece, which I don't even know if is available to the public when this comes out right now. I'm not sure. Hopefully, it will be. But it basically mentioned that his true averages were much like Gilly's. But his true strike rates are off the charts. And I know we've talked about them already. But it can't be, you know, outlined or highlighted enough. I really feel that way. And let's face it, Shayan, Sehwag was the sort of dude who loved boundaries. Fours and sixes were prioritized. That was his jam. Yeah. And he was always like striking the ball aerially. There's even that quote where he says that there are no fielders in the sky or whatever, right? It's also worth mentioning that his strike rotation was also at a par rate, right? And that holds true for both paces or when pace he faced both pace and spin. So sure, I can understand that he wouldn't run a lot of twos and threes. But the fact that he wasn't like a dot ball, you know, consumption machine.
Exactly. Which can happen with openers, right? In the past,
absolutely.
If you look at a lot of great openers, what happens sometimes is that they would hit boundaries, but they would also get stuck. So they might have a score of like, say, 12 of 6 balls, but maybe they've not rotated the strike or something like that. So
absolutely. We see that a lot, actually.
The strike as well.
I mean,
and it's very common, right?
He wouldn't chew up a lot of dot balls. And I think that really kind of lays testament to his pedigree as a T20 bat, because he's not Lendl Simmonsing it, right? He's not like a West Indian batter, whether it's like dot or six. This guy's taking singles fairly like on the regular. So that that increases his stature as a T20 bat, I feel.
Yeah. I just think that probably some of this has to do with the fact that he didn't actually face that many balls on an average compared to, say, a Gayle or Kohli or whoever else we are talking about.
Yeah.
And because if you're facing less amount of deliveries, then obviously you'll have your strike rotation should be better then, right? Like if you're not facing as many deliveries. So I think there's an element of that which probably holds him back from all like those goat tier conversations in the IPL. Yeah. But again, or not in the IPL, actually, I would say T20 cricket, because in the IPL, he would still be among the greatest players to have played the IPL. But in T20 cricket as a whole, of course, he didn't play it in his prime, didn't play a lot of international cricket in T20s. He did win a World Cup, though, the 2007 one, although he didn't play the final. He had a few good knocks in that. I think he had an innings versus England, didn't he? He made 68 runs against England. But so the point being that Sehwag was really good in the IPL and in T20 cricket, but because he didn't have that combination of a high average and a high strike rate, he probably isn't remembered the same way, like say an AB de Villiers or a Chris Gayle is.
Yeah. Like you're just talking about him as one of the finest batters, at least Indian batters, to have ever played the IPL. And he does not have that sort of legacy, unfortunately. Hopefully he will now, after this piece and podcast and Jared's video. But that's kind of why we do what we do at Good Areas, right? To highlight the efforts of people who are kind of unsung, at least with Sehwag in this format. I would say he is unsung. And, you know, there is this one IPL 50 where Sehwag gets to 50, where his strike rate is 72, right? But the rest of his IPL 50s, they come at a strike rate north of 160. So that kind of gives you a pretty solid picture. And this is a guy who scored 2 tons and 16 50s in 104 outings in the IPL. So he crosses 50 17% of the times that he bats in the IPL and the way he bats in, like, you know, the approach. So the math is definitely mathing over here.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think you just mentioned that he had that one score of 50 plus where his strike rate was less than 150, right? And I believe he scored 72. It's the same innings that I was talking about, right? He made 72 of 50 against KKR. And I think the next best was 15. That should put into perspective the one innings where he didn't strike at more than 150. There was some context behind it. And if you have a look, when the piece comes out, you'll see that there is a graph which shows the amount of quick 30s and 40s and 50s that he has. He doesn't actually play a lot of those net negative innings, which sometimes even a lot of great players would end up playing. Like if you remember Chris Gayle or even Josh Butler, like that tier of T20 batters, even they would get stuck at times. And Sehwag just didn't have that. I believe that's a big differentiator.
No, it is absolutely a big differentiator. And just to kind of double down on that, you know, 104 innings in the IPL, and Sehwag's strike rate was below 130 in just 6 of those innings, right? So that is a very common occurrence for batters in his era, a strike rate of under 130. So that really kind of tells you everything that you need to know about Viru in the IPL.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, I do want to ask you a few more things before we conclude this podcast. But before that, we will take another short break. You are watching the Footmarks podcast with Behram and Shayan, and stay tuned. We'll be back in like just a minute or so.
A test happens when you're asleep. Where do you find the best match report? A cricketer's backstory is meticulously crafted by a great writer. But it's a day you're not on social media, and so you miss out. We all do this. It becomes almost a full-time job to follow the sport you love. But there is a solution. The emailer Best of Cricket can tell you what the main stories are and the best articles every single day. And when they can't find them, they even write their own. Now, instead of trudging through Twitter or Blue Sky, you can just wait for the Best of Cricket to email or WhatsApp the greatest cricket stories straight to you. Subscribe to Best of Cricket today.
Welcome back to the Footmarks podcast. You guys are with Behram and Shayan. And I mean, we're nearing the end of this podcast, Shayan. I just want to kind of put you on the spot and ask you some questions over here, right?
Yeah.
Of course, we have been hired by Jared because we already know a lot. But then again, we learn new things every day at Good Areas. I'm not even joking when I say that. Yeah. When you were writing this piece and you were doing your research, what sort of stuff came up that shocked you about Sehwag in the IPL?
Yeah, I would just say that some of his seasons were like really, really good, right? Like the 2011 Sehwag season, if we go back and look at his impact, it was one of the highest impact seasons that we have ever seen in the IPL. Like if we actually go and look at the numbers, just 1 second. Mm-hmm. So for... we did it for minimum 9 innings, just so we could include Jake Fraser-McGurk last season. But Sehwag ranks in the top 10. His impact per innings was 13.52. So he would change the par score by 13.52 per innings in 2011. Right? Wow. And by then, he was a World Cup winner and everything. Hmm. And I think one thing that probably, it's just a theory that I have, is that Sehwag probably isn't remembered the same ways because he played for Delhi and then Punjab, right? Maybe if he goes on to play for a bigger team, like, let's say he played for RCB, even if they don't have any titles, if he played for RCB, he would have a lot more fan following, I would believe. And then let's keep RCB aside. If we say KKR or Mumbai or CSK, one of the IPL winning teams, if he played for one of those teams, his contributions would be highlighted a lot more now. Because even now, if we see, we talk about Gilchrist and how Deccan Chargers won that 2009 IPL, Hayden being a part of those IPL wins. So yes. I think that definitely played a big part in it, that in my opinion, at least, that if he played for a bigger franchise than Delhi and Punjab, with all due respect, he would have definitely had more fan following than he did in the IPL.
I think that's a fantastic point because casual fans often remember title-winning teams. And of course, Mumbai and Chennai have won 5 titles each. Even Kolkata has won 3. And, you know, people remember Davey Warner for 2016 and the Sunrisers Hyderabad, right? Of course, you can throw in Yusuf Pathan in the inaugural IPL season. And every time a batter's, you know, brilliance helps his team lift a trophy, they kind of are remembered more. And cricket nerds or the streets will remember what Sehwag was like in the IPL. But just the fact that he never actually got his hands on the trophy, that does kind of like, you know, it does. It, I wouldn't say it diminishes his legacy, because we all think AB de Villiers is one of the best batters to have ever played the sport.
Exactly.
He hasn't won jack shit. But then again, when it comes to people remembering just how good you were, maybe titles matter.
Yeah. I think for legacy, if your best performances have come in a win, that is like the ideal scenario. Mm. Like, right. Like, no matter how great an innings you play, if it's on the losing cause, it probably won't be remembered. Like, it will be, right? Like, probably it will be, but is it remembered the same way? Like, you'll have that thing of, oh, okay,
like,
that's
for
sad.
For instance, do you remember Ibrahim Zadran's stun in the Maxwell 200 game?
I remember that because I'm a cricket nerd. But
exactly, I'm but sure most people won't remember.
May have just forgotten, right? Yeah, absolutely.
And they would remember Ibrahim Zadran's 170-odd versus England
exactly,
in the Champions
they would
Trophy.
Remember the... Exactly. Because that
it's
came in the
how,
cause, right?
It's funny how I chose Ibrahim Zadran as an example. Random. But anyway, I want to end this podcast again by putting you on the spot. And there are two questions that I have to ask you. So brace yourself. The first one is that where would you say Virender Sehwag ranks amongst the best Indian batters to have ever played in the IPL?
Yeah, so I think I would still say number one is Suresh Raina, right? Like, we did the piece on him last year and his consistency and strike rate and how he played spin in the middle overs. And he was a very important part of CSK being as dominant as they were throughout the IPL, right? Like, even when he was past his prime, he won a couple of IPLs, I think in 2018 and 2021. So he won a lot and he had those clutch performances in playoff games. I know it's not fair to judge players just on clutch games, but I would say it adds to the legacy of a player if you perform well in those games. And so I think,
of course,
Raina is probably one for me. Then I think second is really interesting. I would say probably go for Sehwag, but then there's also Surya Kumar Yadav, who's still playing, and he's had also had a lot of really good seasons. Then obviously you have to talk about Virat Kohli and KL Rahul. And even though there is always that question mark about strike rate and all those things, but I would still say they have the longevity. So when we're doing, I think it's a bit hard to say without doing proper research and going into all of the innings and what impact they've had on the games. But I would still say, I would be confident in saying that Sehwag is a top three Indian batter in the IPL.
Yeah, I think that checks out. Even for me, I don't think there is any hot take there. Especially if you understand T20 cricket the way it should be understood. Because originally, like in its early days, people compared it to things like the WWE and that sort of stuff. But there is a science to T20 cricket and it's gotten very, very complex over the years. And data is a big part of the sport, right? And I consider T20 cricket to be a different sport altogether, if we're really going there.
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay, final question then. Where does Viru rank amongst the best opening batters that the IPL has ever seen?
Yeah.
This is a tough one, right?
This is a tough one, right? So now we have to talk about the overseas opener as well. So obviously I would say Chris Gayle for me is number one. But David Warner is second for me. But I would still say David Warner is not... Like, you can make a very strong case that David Warner is the best IPL batter. Not just opening batter. I would say... So I would go for Chris Gayle, AB de Villiers. I know it's not opening, but I would just say Chris Gayle, AB de Villiers and David Warner. I think these three batters would have really, really strong cases to be called the IPL GOAT batter, with Raina just behind them, I would say. Only because after 2015, Raina was not the same batter. But if Raina just played till 2015, for instance, then I think Raina would also be in that same conversation as them. So I think, so if we're talking about opening batters, right? So one, I would go one Chris Gayle, two David Warner, three would probably...
Joss Butler
was an interesting one. That is exactly what I was thinking about before this podcast. Like, where does he rank?
He's not opening anymore, so I don't know.
He's not opening these days, right? Yeah. And he has had a few seasons where he has not opened, but I think with Butler, the thing is, at times he has not played full seasons, and then at times he has had that one monster season in 2022 where he made more than 800 runs. And I would say that it's close between Sehwag and Butler. But the thing with Butler is that you know that he can also play a controlled innings, right? Like, if it's really needed, he can just pull back and, like, really play those controlled knocks. But then the downside of that would probably be that Butler can get stuck at times. I think Sehwag didn't have that. So I think it's an interesting debate. I would then probably say Sehwag would be three for me and then Butler four.
So what I'm hearing...
Openers?
I think that's pretty much it, right? Abhishek and Travis are too young right now in terms of their IPL exploits. Yeah, so I would hold back on them just for now. But I think, like, so here's what I've heard, and correct me if you disagree with any of this. Third best opening bat in IPL history, potentially second best Indian bat in IPL history, and potentially fifth best batter to ever play the IPL.
Yeah, man. Oh, also, I just forgot. Dhoni also has to be there, right? When we're talking about the great...
So, sixth. Let's go sixth then, right? I think, like, some people will agree, some people will disagree. I know that your rationale is backed by the numbers. So, I'm kind of with you on this. I'm just asking you this stuff because you wrote the piece, right? I'll have to, again, if I have to answer these things, I have to go and do a deep dive as well.
Yeah, exactly.
So, it's not as straightforward. But the point is that, according to the Good Areas team, and I know we all feel strongly about this, Virendra Sehwag is an unsung hero when it comes to not just the IPL, but T20 cricket in general.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I think third as an opener is fair, correct? Mm. Then let's say top five. Mm. Like worst case, he would be in the top five when we're talking about just Indian batters. Yeah. As an opener, all time, he would be in the top three. And again, worst case, if you want to include Butler ahead of him, top five, fine. And then if you want to say overall everything considered, maybe even finishers, like let's say how do we rank Andrew Russell and Glenn Maxwell and Kieran Pollard and those Yusuf Pathan and those players, right? Then I would say if we factor all of that in, it's a bit tough to say right now because we have to do a lot more research. But yes. I would still say he should make the top 10 at least, right? So if I make an all-time IPL team, I would have Sehwag opening in that for sure.
I think everyone
opens up one slot. Yeah.
Everyone who understands T20 cricket would have Sehwag in an all-time IPL team. I feel like that checks out, right? But anyway, you guys let us know in the comment section how you feel about Virendra Sehwag as an IPL bat and where he ranks for you amongst the top Indian batters to play in the IPL, the best openers to ever play in or feature in the IPL, and the best batters ever to feature in the IPL as well. So all three of those, tell us in the comment section below. That also brings us to an end. Shayan, your debut podcast at Good Areas is done. How do you feel?
Yeah, I feel really good, man. Thank you so much for having me.
No. It's my absolute pleasure. And I'm glad that you have kind of broken or ended your Good Areas podcast virginity. So hope to see you feature in many, many more podcasts in the future. And just a quick reminder for you guys. First, go follow Shayan on Twitter and show him some love. Because a lot of you might not know that he's been with us for so long because he's never in front of the camera. But he's writing all those pieces and he's gotten really good at it as well. But anyway, just a quick reminder for all of you guys that you can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. And that can be your one-stop shop for all the work that we do as part of this team, whether it be written content, videos, or podcasts. And that's a wrap for this particular episode of the Footmarks podcast. We'll see you soon enough, either on a live show, a quick picks, a knockout show. You know, Varun's really excited about those ones. One should be out by the time you see this video, actually. And all the other different videos that we do around here. And also, go and watch episode 3 of Kimapa on Sunday, right? So, that's a wrap. And go like, share, and subscribe, all of that fun stuff. And have a good one, guys. And goodbye.
Goodbye, everyone.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make any content, Minvo Pro is the tool for you. Take your long format content and cut it and slice it for social media. This AI-inspired weapon will turn your one piece of work into so many clips. Try Minvo.pro now.